It's Wisconsin Today. On Capitol Hill, lawmakers have 9 days to pass a funding deal in order to keep the federal government running.
And while the clock on this Congress winds down, Wisconsin Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin is hopeful two pieces of bipartisan legislation can make it through the House of Representatives. The bills passed the Senate with unanimous support.
One would help expand high-speed internet in rural areas. The other requires American taxpayer-funded inventions to be manufactured in the U.S. and not by adversary nations.
I talked with Senator Baldwin yesterday about the final push for these bills and Democrats' priorities with a government funding deadline looming and a second Trump administration taking office in a matter of weeks.
Well, there is a sense of urgency to finish some unfinished business that has to get done before the end of the year, and to also act still on as many of President Biden's nominees for crucial positions that may have recently become vacated or are, you know, in process. So that includes federal judges. We want to confirm the remaining judges that are queued up, and a couple of very important commissions or agencies like the National Labor Relations Board. But the unfinished business that must happen before the end of the year include a continuing resolution funding the government through mid-March, as well as an emergency spending plan to deal with the recent emergencies like the hurricanes that came through Florida and North Carolina, the fires that ravaged Maui now a couple years back. And those are the things we hope to do before all is said and done at the close of this year.
Well, let's turn our attention now to some pieces of legislation that you're leading. You co-sponsored the Access Rural America Act with Iowa Republicans Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst. It unanimously passed the Senate. How could your broadband access bill bring high-speed internet to more people in Wisconsin?
Well, and this is especially focused on rural accessibility of high-speed internet. So in many places, especially in rural communities, they are served not by the giant telecommunication companies, but by small telephone co-ops that were founded in some cases over a century ago to provide telephone service, but now are the lifeline to provide high-speed internet to rural communities. And we know today that access to high-speed internet is, it's not a luxury. It is actually a necessity for Wisconsinites to work, to attend school online, to run their businesses, to manage their farms. And so right now, some of these very small local providers are dealing with the same regulatory paperwork that the multi-billion dollar telecoms are doing. And that shouldn't be the case. And so I was proud to join forces with my Republican colleagues, Joni Ernst and Chuck Grassley, to try to relieve these local telecommunications co-ops of the regulatory burden that they're facing that makes it almost impossible for them to fulfill their mission of extending high-speed broadband to their areas.
Another bill that you've sponsored that passed the Senate, waiting for action in the House, is the Invent Here, Make Here Act, targeting American taxpayer-funded inventions to be produced in the U.S. Why did you want to prioritize this legislation?
You know, we have seen, sadly, some instances where our tax dollars have funded research and development that has led to breakthrough inventions. But instead of commercializing those inventions here in the U.S., we've seen examples where, for example, a Chinese company has licensed the technology. I'll give you a specific example. Government-funded research helped develop a breakthrough battery technology. This is a battery that could hold enough energy to power a home, a household. And instead of these batteries becoming a great American success story, a Chinese company was able to buy the technology, and these batteries are now being manufactured in China. I think that when we use taxpayer dollars to invent things, to make discoveries, to find cutting edge innovations, that whatever possible, we should be commercializing and scaling up those breakthroughs here at home in America.
Can you talk about the bipartisan nature of the bill? You co-sponsored it with Senator and Vice President-elect J.D. Vance of Ohio. Did you work with Vance on the specifics of the legislation?
I did indeed. In fact, this is how I operate is when we have a new class of senators after they're elected and sworn in, getting settled, I seek to meet with folks who may have some issues and interests in common. I looked at the fact that Ohio is also a manufacturing state, and just like Wisconsin, and we would have an interest in making sure that manufacturing takes place in America and not and that these taxpayer-funded inventions are not being licensed and manufactured overseas. And so we met, we talked about this issue as well as several others. And by the time our meeting was over, we had pledged to work together on two bills. And that is what I do, because I want to deliver for Wisconsin. So I look for senators, especially across the aisle, who may have similar interests in fighting for their states or industry within their states, or agriculture, for example, within their states. And that's how I find my partners, if you will, on legislation.
Senator Baldwin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And that was Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin. We talked about her bipartisan priorities in this period before the start of a new Congress. In southern Wisconsin, people who work in a wide range of professions are coming together to immerse themselves in a unique 9-month program to hone their leadership skills.
Since 1997, hundreds of people have graduated from the Sauk County Institute of Leadership. Each year, the program enrolls 20 community members from all walks of life.
We're hearing about the program's local impact and what defines a leader with Morgan MacArthur, a facilitator with Sauk County Institute of Leadership and the Community Development Educator for UW-Madison Extension Sauk County. Morgan, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Look, I'm thrilled to be here with you. I'm thrilled that you've shown interest in what we call SCIL, S-C-I-L, Sauk County Institute of Leadership.
You are a 2015 graduate of SCIL, Sauk County Institute of Leadership. Can you walk us through the 9-month program and how it impacted your life?
I was motivated because a friend of mine went through a for-profit program down in Milwaukee, and I watched him change over a year-long program, and I said, I want some of that, but not for that $7,000 price tag. I'm a Baraboo native and living in Milwaukee, and I was coming up to Baraboo on a regular basis and investigated this SCIL or SCIL, and somebody said, you should do this. It's really good. And basically, the program is a 9-month program. We meet one full day every month. Each full day has a theme. And the motives are really threefold. One is to pull back the curtain on challenges that face the county. So they're getting an education about Sauk County, local government, law enforcement, education, healthcare, whatever it might be. We bring in guest speakers and experts from around the county to enlighten our audience about things that probably they'd never have a chance to interact with. How many people, put your hands in the air now, would love to go for a tour of the jail? But it's a real eye-opener to do that and to learn about the culture within the jail. That's just an example.
And we're midway through the sessions now, 2024, 2025. What type of personal growth is happening midway through the program?
It thrills me. There's a fellow, we get a real spectrum of people. I cap the class size at 20, mm-hmm. and I, as the facilitator, don't comfortably like to work with a big group. I want to keep this intimate and to be able to connect with everybody. And there's a real spectrum of attendees. We've got a conservation officer from the DNR, a fellow that's in insurance, healthcare, public service. We've got two from the Ho-Chunk Gaming Enterprise up there, which is fantastic. We learn a lot from those two that are in the class. We've got farming sector represented, a real range. When a physician's learning about a dairy farmer, that's a pretty cool deal. And it's not just casual conversation, right? We're doing some deep work. And so to watch people grow in their awareness and their confidence is thrilling. You start to see yourself as your own unique form of leader. That's not a checklist. You get coded in confidence. You're a different person that comes out the other side. Yeah. And that's my goal.
I'm wondering, you know, when you have facilitators who come and present challenges that you're encountering in Sauk County, has this institute helped to solve local problems or been a part of solutions for Sauk County issues?
Well, I would hope so. And it's not always immediate either, you know, and I accept that. I accept that really the program was instituted back in, it was developed in 1997. And the main aim was we've got all of these community development programs that need leaders, that need people who are doers and leaders, and we don't have enough boots on the ground to do that. And so this program was developed back then. So this is our 26th class. We've got county board supervisors in this class, in the last class, in the class before as well. We've put skilled graduates in a position where they can make a difference.
We're talking with Morgan MacArthur, community development educator at UW-Madison Extension, Sauk County. And we're talking about the Sauk County Institute of Leadership and its efforts to hone leadership skills in the Baraboo area. Morgan, participants in the Institute, they explore topics like personality assessments and team building and trust building and conflict management. In terms of a topic like personality assessments, you mentioned at the outset, some people don't see themselves or view themselves as a leader. Many of them coming into the program don't see themselves in a leadership. What should people understand about themselves as they learn these skills and in terms of their own personality?
Temperament assessment is but one of many tools. We do emotional intelligence as well. We use a product called Real Colors that is based in, it has its origins in the Myers-Briggs type index that many, many of us have taken. Mm-hmm. It helps us understand ourselves, why we are the way we are, but it also, as leaders, helps us understand other people. Mm-hmm. It's helped me with my wife. I'm not a planner. I'm a creative. She's organized. Mm-hmm. And you combine those learnings. We spend a lot of time talking about the power of listening and the power of empathy. And you combine all of those things, and all of a sudden, many things in the world make more sense.
I'm wondering, does a participant's employer have to be fully on board and supportive for their employee to be part of this 9-month commitment?
Well, do they have to? No. I mean, we have had people, believe it or not, who've taken paid time off and come, they've come to skill on their own nickel. So in those cases, the employer may be oblivious to the fact that the employee is attending. Hmm. And I feel a real sense of responsibility to ensure that the programming is of the highest quality, because that's a big investment. That's a big investment. But usually, employers are behind them. As a matter of fact, we have several employers who are sort of feeding us someone every year and supporting them. So it's a modest fee, a modest tuition, $800, which is a bargain for a 9-month program. But there's also 10 days off of work, and that's a big deal. So but for the most part, employers are behind them because it's an investment. It's an investment in their people. It's a statement to their people. We believe in you. We believe that you are a leader, and you might not see it yet, but we do. And it's also, they're going to come back with a new view of their work, of themselves, and of their team relationships.
This being a well-established institute in Sauk County, I wonder, do you have advice for other counties, other communities that may want to create a leadership program like this?
Well, this one was modeled after what was used to be called the Rural Leadership Wisconsin, and then that morphed into Leadership Wisconsin. And that was a two-year program out of the UW. It was kind of like graduate school for these county leadership programs. And back in the day, back in the late 90s, SKILL was one of the first ones to be formed, and then they bloomed like dandelions around the state. Mm-hmm. You know, there are 72 counties in the state of Wisconsin. I don't know what the count was for how many leadership programs, county leadership programs, were generated, but right now there are, to my knowledge, only two left. There is the one in Sauk County and there's the one in Greene County. Both counties border on Dane. So Greene County leaders, as well as the Sauk County Institute of Leadership, are, to my knowledge, the only two county leadership programs that are still pumping along. There are others waiting in the wings that might start up, but the day has kind of come and gone for county leadership programs, and for whatever reason, they've dwindled. My recommendation for anybody who's listening to this conversation, regardless of the flavor of a leadership program, it's an investment in yourself to engage and learn about it. Whether you're a reluctant leader, whether you consider yourself not a leader, whatever, get out there and enter the stretch zone and learn stuff about yourself and about working with people and about leadership, and prepare to be amazed. Because once you've engaged the program, a leadership program, you will change. It'll be so positive.
Before we go, we're on the cusp of a time when people make New Year's resolutions and contemplate them, what they will be like in the new year. What could people do today to make them a better leader next year, in the new year?
You know, I saw a bumper sticker one time that said, leaders are readers. So reading, and we are living, Kate, I can say this as an old guy, 66 years old. We are in an era, we are in a time now where we have an abundance of resources like never before, whether it's YouTube, streaming, you know, our libraries, whatever it might be. But leaders are readers. So it's low-hanging fruit to pick up a book and read it cover to cover about self-development, and not necessarily self-help, but leadership development, insights, learn from other people's experience. That's where I would start. You know, I've got book disease. I've got a stack of books by my bedstand, and that's where I would start. Participating in a leadership program is fantastic. I had a transformative experience. I'm trained as a veterinarian, and so years and years and years ago, I was a practicing veterinarian.
Wow.
And I attended, got involved with the Toastmasters organization to become a better public speaker, and it was transformative. My career arc, my professional and personal direction changed dramatically, and it comes back to that coding that was confidence, but also put my hand in the air. Now you can't stop me from talking. You see, you've got that problem. But yeah, so anything that you can do, I'm speaking to the listener now, anything you can do to engage in investigation and education, do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Mm-hmm. The comfort zone is a beautiful place, but nothing ever grows there. And so the thing to do is to engage with some form of personal development program, education, and keep yourself growing. Because all things that grow change, and all things that change grow. There you go.
Morgan, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Morgan MacArthur is a facilitator with the Sauk County Institute of Leadership. For decades now, this 9-month leadership program has worked to develop these skills in the community.
It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The holiday season is upon us, and many businesses around Wisconsin have put up festive lights and decorations to celebrate.
But one bar in downtown Appleton is ahead of everybody. They've had their Christmas decorations up for decades.
Cleo's Brown Beam Tavern is Christmas-themed all year with over-the-top decor and a winter-inspired cocktail menu. Cleo's was established by local restaurateur Cleo Brown in 1970, and the owners and staff today have kept up the bar's legendary year-round Christmas theme.
Alicia Andrews is the manager of Cleo's Brown Beam Tavern in Appleton. Alicia, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you.
Can you start us off with the origin story? How did Cleo's become an all-year Christmas-themed bar?
Well, it started because Cleo loved Christmas, and one year she decided that she wanted to be festive just a little while longer and left the decorations up into the new year. And the customers, as they are off to do, gave her a little grief about it. And Cleo decided to double down. And she went over to the department store just down the street on College. And they had actually decided to change out their Christmas window dressings. And she went and got all of their old stuff, threw it in the back of the truck, brought it into the bar, and put more decorations up.
I love that, because you'd assume, like, oh, somebody would be doing this Christmas thing to be festive and good cheer. No. Kind of like a little ornery, like, oh, you're going to complain about Christmas? Oh, I'll give you Christmas.
She was a very formidable lady, from what I understand. I never got the pleasure of meeting her, but from everybody that I have spoken to that has, that just was what she was like.
Now, when did you join the Cleo's team, and what kind of changes have you seen there over the years?
I joined as a bartender in late 2019, so right before COVID and everything kind of went crazy. And I've been there as a manager for the last 3 years. You know, when you have a place like Cleo's, you really don't want to go too crazy with the changes. If it's not broke, you don't really have to fix it.
Now, your first time walking in the door at Cleo's, I don't know if you'd been there as a local before, or maybe you went in for your first job interview, but what was your first impression on this all-year decorated Christmas bar?
It was very overstimulating, but in a good way. I hadn't really been in as a patron more than maybe once or twice before I started working here. But I mean, I walked in and I really loved it. I'm personally extra. So this is the perfect place for me.
Now, people may hear all your Christmas and think decorations great, or they might think music. Oh, no. Is there the all year Christmas music?
No, I would not be able to keep a staff, myself included. We generally don't play Christmas music unless it is actual Christmas, but that doesn't mean that the patrons aren't going to come in and play Mariah Carey on our jukebox in the middle of July.
Yeah, I got to ask, what happens in December? Do you even kick it up a notch from the year-long decorations, or is it just the usual stuff plus maybe a little bit of the music?
It's the usual stuff with a little bit of the music. I mean, me personally, I mean, I ramp it up myself. The staff gets, you know, they like to dress up. They like to be festive. You'll see somebody walking around with sequin reindeer horns on. The customers get into it. They'll come in decked out and dressed up. It's just, you know, warm feelings all around.
And now I'm sure in the summertime, you've seen a lot of people come in and I don't know what, take a minute to register what's going on. What are some of the reactions you get from those first timers visiting, you know, not in December?
Oh, boy. You usually have to give them a couple of seconds after they walk in the door just to kind of catch their bearings, because there's just so much for people to take in that they need a minute.
We're talking to Alicia Andrews, the manager of Cleo's Brown Beam Tavern, a cocktail lounge in downtown Appleton with a year-round Christmas theme. Cocktails, Alicia, you've got some. There's one, I think this one's on your front window, the Dirty Snowball. This is your signature cocktail. Tell us about it.
The Dirty Snowball is essentially a blended white Russian. So vodka, coffee liqueur, some half and half, and then we add some creme de coco, which is a chocolate liqueur, and then we blend it over ice, and it comes out like a big boozy milkshake, complete with cherries on top.
This sounds like a candy bar in cocktail form, basically, right?
Well, calories don't count on Christmas, so.
Yeah, but you make them all year round. But it's always Christmas when you're in Cleo's.
Yes, absolutely. That's my logic. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, and then there's another seasonal drink you do this time of year, I think, the candy cane martini. What gives it that candy cane look and feel and flavor, of course?
That's correct. So the candy cane martini is like a peppermint, white chocolate concoction complete with a mini candy cane on the side. So it's festive, it's fun, it tastes good. People love them. We roll them out at the Christmas parade, so end of November, and we feature them through December, and they come back every year.
Now, of course, some people can love fancy drinks but not want alcohol for a variety of reasons. Do you have some good non-alcoholic mocktail or whatever you want to call them options for people?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We've got a whole page of mocktails. I myself am a non-drinker. I found myself in bars wanting something a little more than an orange juice or a Diet Coke. And that experience for me has kind of helped us develop this list so people can come in and have something a little fun and interesting and feel like they're a part of the group and not just, the DD with a soda.
I love that because I drink actual cocktails, but I also love mocktails. And yeah, I don't like ones that are just something sweet with something really sweet and maybe a little sweetener to sweeten it up. What kind of things do you do to give, a good, complex, non-alcoholic mocktail experience?
Well, we work with our liquor distributor, and they offer a lot of no alcohol spirits. So they're distilled just like regular alcohol is, but they are not made with alcohol. So that kind of gives us a little freedom to have a little more complex flavors than just, a Shirley Temple.
And you've got a non-alcoholic old fashioned, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So how is that? Do people like them? Even ones who like, the brandy old fashioned, are they cool with drinking the non-alcoholic one too?
People seem to really like them. I've gotten feedback from many people that it's never going to be exactly the same, but it's similar and it scratches that itch for them.
Now, besides the unique Christmas theme and decorations and things like that, what else do you think makes Cleo's special, unique?
I think it has a lot to do with nostalgia. I mean, you see people that come here every year around Christmas time, they gather with their families, they come down for a snowball, and it's associated with warm feelings for a lot of people.
Now, you've been running Cleo's for 5-ish years now, so you've got to be kind of a Christmas celebration connoisseur. Do you have some advice for people getting in the holiday spirit and hosting festivities and things like that this season?
My advice is just to take the people that you care about and hold them close and celebrate together. I mean, the party is always more merry with more people.
And now I'm assuming it's going to be hard to pick just one, but do you have a favorite Christmas decoration at Cleo's, a favorite part of the scenery there?
My favorite part of the scenery is the mermaid that is hanging from the ceiling inside of the rowboat. I realize that without being able to see this, it sounds insane.
Why does the mermaid need a rowboat?
She's hanging out inside of a rowboat. She's got a festive holiday top. And I affectionately call her Clay Tina because she looks like Clay Matthews.
Wow. That's a heck of a mermaid. I'm hoping you can send us a picture of Clay.
Yeah. I can send a picture over. Yeah, I'll send a picture over.
All right. Well, have a great Christmas, December, and all year round. Alicia, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Have a Merry Christmas yourself.
That was Alicia Andrews, manager of Cleo's Brown Beam Tavern in Appleton, a bar that prides itself on spreading holiday cheer throughout the entire year with Christmas decor and wintry cocktails. Is there a local bar or restaurant in your community that goes all out for the holidays? Tell us about it. Send pictures. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.